beaming into your mind like a ray of cosmic revelation, smashing through the mainstream like a comet of prophecy. You're listening to Planet Vrelok, your podcast for everything super psionics and magic tech. Yes, welcome to my show. Tonight's podcast, the Ur-Rune of Vital Might. Tonight I'm going to lecture on the topic of psionic wellness and spiritual cleansing. Don't yawn. Don't fall asleep so quick. I promise this will be somewhat useful to you, particularly in the area of how our species has viewed the cosmos and our relationship to the cosmical. So without further ado, let us begin. What kind of world do we live in where our entire understanding of psychic wellness and spiritual cleansing has been stood on its head by the contemporary and modern mind? Well, quite frankly, we're not allowed to talk about the alternative to popular science or medicine. I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not even going to make the attempt to argue health of the body in the area of medicines. I will, however, present a question to the medical community in regard to certain substances and materials which have become popularly challenged by a number of people across the internet and on social media. Albeit, we can never be too careful of yellow journalism. However, aside from the various alarmists, could there be any possible truth to some of these claims? For one thing, there is this aspartame everyone and their nephew is starting to ask questions about. More specifically, why this stuff is in our diet soda and painkillers. Folks across the internet are shouting that this aspartame causes all manner of health and mental problems. Now, I cannot say for certain whether or not this is true, but I do know that ever since I started consuming diet sodas, well, I've developed a very strong craving for these soft drinks. I mean, no meal seems to be complete without a diet soda. I don't care if it's a Diet Coke, a Diet Pepsi, or a Sam's Diet Cola. But, you know, so is the diet soda an addictive substance? I don't know. And what is in diet soda which would bring about a craving to have one more, and just one more of these beverages, which just seem to be like out of this world? And what is so out of this world about these beverages? I mean, frankly, diet soda doesn't really even taste like regular soda. It doesn't really taste like anything at all. So why am I, like so many other folks out there, hooked on this stuff? Well, I can tell you one thing. Once I realized that this diet soda had me just craving for it, I began spacing apart how many sodas I drink in a week. And my personal results are rather interesting. Again, I'm speaking subjectively here. While there is still a serious craving for one of these beverages, I am feeling better when I space out the number of times I consume one of these beverages. So putting some space in between these beverages, you know, switching back to drinking water or iced tea and so on. Now, of course, the information I've just stated is rather subjective, as I've said. You will have to consider your own subjective feelings about consuming these beverages, and if you're really concerned, talk to a physician and ask. Interestingly, there is a claim that soy sauce in Japan includes in its ingredients some aspartame. Why? Why on earth would it include aspartame? I am not entirely sure. But if I consider that in Japan, fewer people drink sodas or diet sodas, and fewer people rely on over-the-counter painkillers, as I've observed, because many people in Japan instead supplement with natural green tea or what's called matcha, M-A-C-H-A. It's pretty good too. And you can not only drink matcha as a tea, but recently my wife took matcha and baked it into a dark chocolate fudge cake, and it was out of this world, let me tell you. Throw in some bananas and blueberries, or maybe swap that for some maple and brown sugar oatmeal, or some apple spice oatmeal and cinnamon, and you just can't go wrong. You know, it kind of leads one to suspect that, well, is it even remotely possible? Is it that someone's out there in the world want every single person on the planet to consume products with some degree of aspartame in it? It's quite a stretch of the imagination, but yet, I wonder. Yes, well, now onward to psychic wellness and spiritual health. I had never been much interested in health and wellness while I was a younger man. Like most people, such considerations only happen after the fact of realization sets in that a general decline in overall health in our bodies is occurring. We always do things when it's kind of too late, you know? It's kind of our modern human nature. Upon such realizations, I discovered products such as iodine, works pretty good, colloidal silver, oxy silver, a variety of herbs. I even use eye bright, that's for the eyes, and the study of mushrooms as being somewhat effective in absorbing, get this, radiation. Now again, this is not medical advice. These are based off of things I've read, things I've experimented and tried, and so subjectively I have felt a lot better. I tell you, when I was living in Japan after the Fukushima meltdown, guess what? We made sure to eat a lot of mushrooms because, you know, the radiation is still a problem today. Yeah, it's very, very sad, very unfortunate that event happened. Yet, this is only the physical considerations of wellness. Tonight I'm going to talk about the psychic and magical considerations. It wasn't until I undertook a more serious study of the runes and Old Norse magic and the lore of the Teutonic people that I realized overall wellness is also an attitude and a state of mind, really. You know, much of this is really about a state of mind. And many of our psionics, not to go off on a tangent here, but most of the psionic stuff we work with is really, with the exception of radio waves and eloptics, or electrolight optic lenses, the majority of radionics and psionic equipment is really just a prop to give us an interface to work with, and it's really our minds doing a lot of this work. And that's because our minds are really tied into everything else in the cosmos, which I will talk more on this as we roll on. You see, as far as health, our habits severely influence our actions on a daily basis. For instance, routinely smoking is going to put a lot of pressure on the blood vessels. At least that's what medical doctors say. The lungs, chances of getting lung cancer, and mouth cancer, and overall, in which the way in which we interact with other people, the latter being possibly categorized as social wellness. For instance, a loss of temper or a lack of patience can result from being severely reliant upon nicotine, and then of course the other chemicals which are found in cigarette smoking. Please understand me, I'm not saying that you have to quit smoking in order to live a relatively happy lifestyle. Rather, it is a relationship of knowing how to, on occasion, deny the chemical urges now and then, so that when you do indeed smoke, over time it's more of a hobby, an art form, and not something that rolls into a serious addiction problem or a dependency, which, you know, in most cases these things do. But that goes for anything, whether it's food, drinking alcohol, too much coffee, sex addictions, any kind of obsessiveness. Chemicals that are introduced into the body or our activities can cause some problems. Again, I speak from personal experience and from what I've read. And I'll explain in a moment a little more of what I'm getting at in all of this. Let's look at how my pursuit of rune might and the Nine Doors to Midgar improved my habits somewhat, and my attitude towards health and overall mental and physical wellness. Essentially, I was following the guidance of a rune master to learn each of the rune staves in the circle of the Elder Futhark. Recognizing the runes for their general attributes is inadequate, at least from a magical standpoint. For scholars, maybe that's all you really need to know. For academics, perhaps learning to read the runes and understanding history is all you need to know. But for magicians, well, I sooner than later realized that this study of the runes is missing something very important. Unlike sigils from old medieval grimoires, which can be transmitted radionically or magically to a person to make subtle or sometimes spectacular transformations in that person's life, the runes require a little more comprehension and contemplation. It's time well spent that I'm speaking of. This at first might seem a little ironic or unnecessary, for the runes themselves are rather straightforward and, well, simple in form. Yet do not let the mainstream New Age writings deceive you as to the true power of these wonder staves. Runes are intended as a representation of various concepts about the universe, the physical world, the invisible realms, other dimensions, and both the human and animal species on this planet. In a nutshell, runes are the expression of a people who lived long ago in the northern world of the Old Norse, and then, of course, those runes carried over into Icelandic magic, the Danes, the Germans, and so on. Possibly this was made possible by the use of boat, but also horses, which the rune for horse is a very important rune, by the way. And this rune is also tied to our English language, for instance. Some people don't realize this, but a lot of English also comes from the Teutonic words. It was later Latinized. But it all began with the Teutons, who only later funneled down into Europe to reestablish the heads of states around, or I think it might have been after the fall of the Roman Empire, or so if my memory serves me well. There's already a natural connection and relationship to the universe in each and every human being. We have to begin with that understanding first before we begin our voyage into the runes. We are unknowingly transforming reality in every instant of our lives. Our minds are continuously sending and receiving signals to our environment and to other people, and of course within our own bodies, or energy fields associated with the human aura, the etheric body proper, the astral levels, and of most importance to us psionicists, the ultimate mental energy fields related to our own minds and to the various intelligences populated throughout the entire cosmos. We have to begin with that understanding and that belief before we can move forward. If you cannot understand this, that's where you need to stop and reflect. Because the rest of these magical alphabets and systems, they're not going to help you unless you first understand your connection to everything in the universe. Incarnation might be thought of as more of an illusion or a virtual reality more than anything else. It's a very solid and wondrous illusion to be an incarnate human being, seemingly separated from our environment. Yet, underlying this, spiritually, we are indivisible. Runes are our fixated characters to which we can both read and write reality from. So we might think of the runes as a template. The tradition is one which carries meaning through the rune staves throughout the ages on up to our modern world. Let's take, for instance, traffic signs. Every no-go sign on the street, for example, the horizontal bar or line on street signs, which tell us, "Do not enter," is indeed the rune Issa, turned horizontally, or also known as the rune for ice. That contractive force in the universe, which was the darkness and pre-existing all, before the beginning of cosmic expansion throughout the realms of physical matter. When we are working with the runes, we are tying into each stave both an agreement with the ancients of our ancestors, and that's the spiritual aspect, or possibly even necromantic aspect of the runes, if we want to call it that, and then a self-involved willpower, and interpretation of what these staves actually mean. This practice communion with the runes of ancestry will form a series of useful magic keys and characters, or we call them rune staves, to represent forces in nature and in the mind of man and the gods, which are rather universal in human potential. And, of course, natural phenomena. When I first worked with the rune, or also known as Urus, the sound associated with the bellowing beast, Urus, as it is also called, I practice a daily morning exercise, minus the details here. For about 2 years I did this, and during that time I began to have a change in character. I realized some of my health problems were due to my own habits. But more profoundly did I realize this. More importantly, somehow the force of will and willpower became stronger inside of myself to push away the things that were bothering my overall wellness. I shunned away from alcoholic beverages. I quit smoking for about 6 or 7 years, and basically went back to enjoying a fine tobacco without having to chain smoke just to get a fix. So now on occasion I can enjoy my tobacco, natural tobacco preferably. My breathing improved. I got my second wind back, as they say. It means I can run and jog and do things. I began playing badminton at the town gymnasium. And of course, I was able to begin longer walks, stretching my stride and jogging for cardiovascular health. My teeth improved, oral health improved, less headaches, overall better circulation of blood and the body's water. So then I reflected upon the deeper meaning of this rune, which is both a positive and a negative. Let's talk about that. On the negative side, this rune is attributed to a poem about, possibly, as I interpreted this poem, the unpleasantness associated with drizzling rain. Now, on the positive end of the spectrum, for this point in the frequencies of the cosmos, this rune is the association to a now extinct kind of animal, a great horned beast, which was written as being unbeatable in combat and fiercely strong. As it turns out, the Ur rune, or again also called Urus, is a rune which begins with the telluric powers of elemental earth, and it rises from the earth to meet with elemental air. And then it returns to earth as sun or as rain, or drizzle and water droplets. You know, that's the flip side to this rune. Therefore, colds and catching illness is also attributed to this, but an illness of which also makes the survivor of these ills much stronger thereafter by improving the immune system. Sometimes illnesses enter our body in which to challenge us so that we may kick out of our body weakness. Again, I'm speaking spiritually here and not as a medical doctor. To be clear, the function of the Ur rune is to push weakness out so that strength is allowed to grow. I'll repeat that one more time. The Ur rune pushes weakness out so that strength is allowed to grow. So having started my quest to fully gestate the Ur rune, I continued to have these coincidental encounters with objects and shapes which resembled this rune. The first of these incidents was seeing this rune in a shop window at a mall in Japan. The second encounter was on the drive home and looking over a bypass and seeing a postponed construction project, where upon this construction site was this metal beam shooting up from the ground and then arcing into a sharp angle and bending again toward the ground, essentially forming a perfect Ur rune or Uru's rune. As I took notice of continuous encounters with this rune, I realized that my reason for seeing this rune everywhere, even when I wasn't thinking about it consciously, is due to the fact that my mind or mental energy field is continuously interacting with reality due to my magical lifestyle and unbeknownst to me consciously. You know, or at least I've never really given it much thought at that time. There is a saying quoted purportedly from Gautama Buddha that I read in a book by Leo Ludzia back in the 1980s, and it goes something like this: all that we are is the result of all that we have ever thought. End quote. Words of the compassionate Buddha. So in essence, basically, I was creating my reality around me without really understanding how I was doing it. And that's why I talk about this need for a magical lifestyle, so that we become in control of the web of synchronicity, that matrix that we're involved in. Read my book. It's called Keep the Magic High at verloc.com/shop. And learn all about the magical lifestyle and what you can do to get started. With this, I would like to leave all of you with your thoughts tonight. Consider now how psionics and learning Verloc psionics might help you to master the invisible world of information, which is, by the way, the building blocks and tools of psionics most effectively. As you begin to learn how to manipulate information in all things, you will then become an influencer in all things. First, let us master ourselves before venturing forward into the outer spheres of this cosmic playground that we call reality. If you enjoy these podcasts, please patronize the Verloc Psionic Shop at verloc.com/shop. And before I let you all go, good news, we have a returning guest who's going to blow this show away. He's really going to excite our listening audience. A good friend, Charles Cosmano, will be returning to the show to talk about something very interesting, a very historical experience, and I'll save the surprise for you. We might even talk about that Tepaphone a little bit too, so stay tuned and do subscribe to the newsletter so you can be the first to know when I do release the podcast. Thank you for joining me tonight on Planet Vrelok, and until next time, as always, always keep the magic high. This is Tom Vrelok, signing out.